Hello and welcome back to the Grief Trails podcast. I'm your host, Amanda Kernahan from Remember Grams, a small business dedicated to helping you support those in your life experiencing grief. I hope you'll consider sending someone a personalized card or a grief support box. Shipping within the U.S. is always free, and we treat each order with special care, paying attention to every detail. This will be the first episode releasing in the new year, a week later than I had intended. My house has been full of COVID around the holidays, and like so many of us learn to do when we are in grief, learning to extend grace to ourselves, it is a lesson that I try to keep with me for general life. And recognizing that sometimes things are hard and the answer can be to rest rather than to push through. That said, a new year often brings the energy of fresh starts and new ambitious goals. And I just want to remind everyone that it's okay if your goal this year is just to find more peace in your life. I remember the first New Year's after my mom died. And even though it isn't a big holiday like Christmas is in our family, I remember there was something daunting about entering a year that she had never lived in, never breathed in. It wasn't my most happy New Year full of incredible resolutions, but it was a quiet one. And one that I worked through and went on to find all sorts of blessings waiting for me in that year. Whether your holidays and New Year were happy or extraordinarily difficult, or some confusing mixture of the two, I'm so happy that you're here. And in today's episode, I think it will be a reminder of the good things that can await us on the other side of immense tragedy when we make the sometimes difficult choice to stay and to wade through the pain. Today's guest is no stranger to loss. She's lost several children, a husband, and her vision in one eye. But the things she's gone on to achieve and the perspective she's gained and incorporated into her life is proof that we can go on, even when it's so hard. Here to share her story is Dr. Barbara Hopkinson, founder of A Butterfly's Journey, a nonprofit for resilience after loss, as well as the Compassionate Friends of Greater Newburyport, Massachusetts, which is part of the largest recovery organization in the world supporting families after a child dies. In addition to these incredible organizations, she's also certified as a specialist in the grief recovery method, a speaker, and an author. I hope you'll enjoy listening to her story. Let's take a listen.
Well, my name is Barbara Hopkinson. I live north of Boston, and I spent probably 30 years in the international technology software industry and 10 years with IBM. And during that time, I lost both parents. I lost three of my four children, and I lost my second husband. And a little bit later on, I actually fell. I was swimming in a triathlon with my niece, and in preparing for that at the gym, I actually fell and detached my retina, and that caused me to lose the sight in one eye. So because of all the loss, especially my 21-year-old, because my 21-year-old Brent died in a motorcycle accident on Arizona State University, and he had been to Army ROTC high school and college. He was on his way just about to get into as an Army pilot. He had already passed his written aviation test.
Wow.
And so that was a really sudden shock. Before that, I had lost two babies, a miscarriage, and a full-term stillborn, Robbie. So, you know, all of that was very upsetting, but losing the 21-year-old just totally rocked our lives. So my 30-year marriage fell apart a year after our son died, and I had my other son was 19 at the time when Brent died at 21, Brad, and he's still with us, thank God.
Yes.
And it was really tough on him, but he now has two children and is a great chef. He went to Johnson & Wales, and he owns his own restaurant in this great little community town outside of, you know, kind of a long suburb of Boston, Barrier Island. Anyway, but when that happened, the 1-2 punch of all of that, I did attempt suicide and hit bottom, but it became a turning point for me. And I instinctively knew that helping others would help me heal. And luckily, I called my sister and got the heck out of, I was, you know, carbon monoxide, it was a trigger. Something happened one day and it was a trigger. And I just realized that I had really been already thinking about retirement and grandchildren, and everything changed because my marriage fell apart. You know, my children, my older son was gone, the one who was crazy about kids. And it just went on. And so I pulled into the garage and just shut the door and was serious about it. But luckily, it gave me a few minutes to think, and I realized I couldn't do that to my remaining son, Brad. And thank God, I mean, he's got two wonderful children now. And yeah. But anyway, so I started within a year, I started my founded my first nonprofit, which was a local chapter of the Compassionate Friends USA, a national organization. And it's one of Newburyport, Mass. And so I ran that for 20 years. I just turned it over to somebody else this past summer. And about 10 years in, I wanted to do more. I also released a memoir. And so I started that in 2003. I released a memoir in 2013 and started another nonprofit called A Butterfly's Journey for More General Grief, because that support group was for families that had lost a child, grandchild, or sibling. And when I started A Butterfly's Journey, and then turned that into a nonprofit, but for more general grief, and that has three main components. It's got a free online resource center. I've got an advanced certification to teach grief recovery method classes. I do that with any place over Zoom with anybody that can speak English, basically. And that's the only evidence-based methodology in the world for grief. And I do it mostly one-on-one. It's a 7-week class, so it's finite and action-based. It's complementary to support groups or therapy. But anyway, and then the third thing that my nonprofit focuses on is called Faces of Resilience. So I actually do photo shoots at grief-related events, where we encourage open expression around grief. So a lot of times people, especially if they've lost a child or some difficult losses with stigma like suicide and overdose and things like that, it's very difficult for them. People run from them, right? And they just don't want to talk about it. And people hate to talk about grief anyway. So what the photo shoots do is we encourage them to express themselves. And when they, whatever phrase they want to say that's special to them or between them and their loved one, I write it on their skin with a washable marker. And then we take a professional photo and we professionally edit it and send it to them. So it's very cathartic and visceral for them to do it. And then it's a catalyst for them to talk about their grief when they get the photo with their family and friends, which is probably the most healing thing you can do.
That's incredible. And so, I haven't heard about that. So I love
you hadn't? Okay.
Yeah, I love learning about that. It's definitely a resource I'd love to share with other people. And I'm sure people listening to the podcast will be super interested in that. So
yeah, well, there's a book. So my memoir is also called A Butterfly's Journey, Healing Grief After the Loss of a Child. But then I have a photo book called Faces of Resilience with all different sorts of grief. And you know, it's just first names of people that we use, but it's been very well received. And I've done it all over the country at several national conferences like Brief Parents of the USA and the Compassionate Friends. I've done it. We just did one a couple of weeks ago at an organization called SAD-OD, which is Support After Death to Overdose. And we've done it at, you know, Overcoming Addiction Vigils, on grief cruises all over the country, Canada, the Caribbean, London. I've got phrases in 12 languages, and I really want to take that more international and do themed books related to all these photos. But yeah, that's my passion.
Wow. I mean, what an incredible journey. But if we can go back,
yep,
I know
that's
okay. There's a lot to talk about. Statistically, I know I've heard, and I don't know the actual statistics, that losing a child is often a catalyst for divorce, that partners and married couples have difficulty navigating the grief of losing a child. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I'm not sure what the stats are either. And I think some of them are a little off, because I know some people say, you know what, that was probably had issues in the marriage anyway. And mine did as well. We had separated a couple of times, and it was just a catalyst to finish it off, but it wasn't the whole cause. But I think it's a fairly high percentage, taking that into account, like maybe 70. I mean, I don't really know what it is. But I think in my experience, and especially working with so many couples that have lost children, in addition to my own experience, people either get very close together and really support each other well, or they split apart because they grieve very differently. My ex and I grieved extremely differently. I mean, we're very different personalities anyway, but we just went opposite directions in terms of our grief. And that was tough. That was tough to navigate. And, you know, he kind of moved on to other pastures. So,
yeah. What kind of advice do you give couples who are in that scenario?
Well, first of all, not to expect each other to grieve the same, and to give each other space and to understand you're going to grieve differently. And it's tough. I mean, especially a loss that traumatic, because you don't expect your children to die before you, right? It's just not the natural order of things. And so I would just say, you really, to be just some understanding and some patience, and not expect them to just interpret or know what you're feeling or going through, because each of your relationships with your child or anybody for that matter is individual. I mean, even pets, right? I mean, I've had a mother that has lost her dog, but her dog was really like her child, you know. Mm-hmm. So this, it's unique to each person, and each person grieves in their own unique way and in their own time frame. There are no rules around this stuff. There's no there's no deadlines. It is what it is. You do it. It helps if you work at it, you know. If you don't isolate and you actually go and do things to try to help yourself. You know, I can go into a bunch of suggestions if you want me to, but.
For you, after the loss of your son and getting to that really low point in your life where mm-hmm. you considered ending your own life, mm-hmm. after that point, what helped you move through your grief? And, you know, I know you mentioned that you started a foundation, but like what happened in the in between those two things? And how did you get to the place where you felt like you were ready to start something for other people?
I think, luckily, I had an instinct that helping others would help me heal. And so, you know, after the initial phase of literally not hardly being able to get out of bed and just to get up and make coffee or any sort of a meal was a real effort. But I did go back to work after a couple of weeks, which was too early. But it did force me out, you know, into the world. And I did have supportive family and friends, which helped a lot because isolation is tough. It's really tough on you. But I ended up doing so I went out and actually looked up other bereaved parents. And then we talked about starting this group and I got some help with a couple of people. And we considered doing it on our own, but then someone told me about the Compassionate Friends that focuses on that. And so I talked to their regional director and he came out and met with me. And we decided to do that because they would have a lot more resource. So that took, you know, it took a while to focus and get all that going. And then we actually had our first meeting within a week of the first year of my son's death. So that was kind of the target. And yeah, that's unusual. It goes that fast. But I'm a doer. So to me, it helps me to jump in and do something about it, you know. And then I was working for IBM in a really high pressure job. We didn't talk about things like spirituality. I didn't even know what the word meant. But that was such a shock to me that not only did I tell, I was in a really high pressure job and I requested to move and my boss was resistant at the time, but I said to them, look, the worst thing that could happen to me has. So you therefore have no power over me anymore. I don't care about your deadlines and your quotas. Let me out of this job or I'll just leave the company. And which was crazy, you know, financially at the time, but I would have done it. But anyway, we did. And then I had one of the best jobs I ever had and a very understanding boss. But I started on this exploration of the butterfly's journey. Really, to me, means I was on a journey to figure out whether or not my son's spirit continued. And so I got into all kinds of exploration and reading about spirituality and a lot of the afterlife stuff and things like that. And that helped me. That helped me a lot. And I finally proved to myself that absolutely did his spirit continue and all of our spirits continue. And I had gotten some signs that were pretty irrefutable. So that all helped. I did things like I tried energy healing. I had no idea what energy healing was, but I've got a friend who's a shaman who explained it to me. And I tried it and it helped a lot. And so then I tried every form of energy healing you could think of. You know, I did shamanic massage and reflexology and acupuncture and polarity and Reiki and, you know, whatever. But, you know, I think it's really important to keep an open mind and keep trying things because you never know what's going to help. And that stuff helped. Journaling helped tremendously. Walking in nature helped. You know, just being very deliberate about trying to do that. And what I tell people is one of the biggest turning points for me was when I finally got to the point where I could think of my son's loss as a gift. I'm sorry, his life as a gift, not just a loss. Because when I thought about it and said, okay, if I had two choices, I either never have known him or get to do it all over again, what would I do? And I would absolutely do it all over again, as hard as it was. Because, you know, the 21 years I had with him was such a gift. You know, now when I think of him, I don't think of the loss. I think of all the, you know, mother-son trips we did. And he talked me into a bungee jump once. We did front seats of roller coasters all day one day. You know, he was an adrenaline junkie. So
oh, wow. Yeah. Forward. What else can you tell me about them? I love to hear about people and like their personalities, but bungee jumping is terrifying. So yeah. that tells me a little bit about him.
Yeah, he was very bright and he was mature for his age and very independent. And so his name was Brent Robert DeLibero. And he, oh God, at age, he was asking so many questions about this talk. And was kind of a challenge. He'd just make up stories like we'd be in a movie and he was trying to talk these kids out of some candy because I wouldn't buy them candy. I was in one of those no sugar phases. they just said, well, if you can tell me, he told him he had already seen the movie. He knew the story. And they said, well, if you can do that, you know, I'll give you some of my candy. And he just made it up, you know, made it up on the fly. And then he pushed me to put him on a plane by himself at age 11. To go visit. I had sent him to visit my cousin in Florida, one of my cousins in Florida, because he was dying to go do something on his own. And then he went off. He came home from, I think, his first year in high school, you know, flunking science. And he was way too bright for that. And we're on his case. And he said, I want to be a pilot. I want to go to military high school. And so we went looking for places and he found the oldest, starkest one he could find. He moved out at 15 and went to New York Military Academy in Cornwall and Hudson, New York. And I remember the first week he called because they wouldn't let him call for a week. Right. And he called and he said something. He had done 300 pushups because I knew he was testing the boundaries with them. And every time he tested a boundary, they made him do a whole bunch of pushups. And he loved it. He ended up being third captain, chief of staff, got a full scholarship out to Arizona State University. He could have gotten into West Point, but by then he was already near West Point for 3 years and he was bored with that. He went out to Arizona, loved it out there, met a woman he was getting engaged to, and she's a sweetheart, Laura. And then he did, he got through ASU, and he had already passed his written aviation test, and he was just about to go to boot camp after his junior year in college, and he would have committed 8 years to the Army to be trained as a Comanchero. He wanted to be a Comanchero Apache jet-powered helicopter pilot. So he was driven. He was, you know, he was really self-motivated.
Very independent.
Yeah, very, very clearly. Yeah. I mean, he'd walk in, he's the kind of kid that at 16, he'd walk in our house with adult friends, you know, and offer them a drink or, you know, he'd be as comfortable around a CEO as he was around one of his buddies. He's just an unusual, I think a lot of the kids are like that when they die young. It's almost like their subconscious knows it's going to happen and they mature and they fit a lot into their life. And he did that. And we were both pretty strong willed. So it was pretty funny, but yeah, he was great.
No, I believe that too. I believe that there is something subconsciously that people who die young sometimes do fit a little bit more into their lives than.
Yeah. And it had a big impact, of course, on his brother. That was really tough on him. And it left him to be an only child because he lost his older and his younger brother. But he gained a lot of confidence. He went to Johnson & Wales, which is one of the top cooking schools in the country. And then after he graduated, he got an opportunity to buy a small restaurant and he did. And then he really flourished with his own confidence and stuff. And because, you know, he was more of a creative, hands-on sort of a kid. And so now he owns his own, a bigger restaurant, a seafood restaurant. Yeah. So it's great.
Was he living at home with you when this happened or was he already out on his own?
No, he was 19. He had just graduated high school. So this literally happened. All right. So the week that Brent died, this is crazy. All right. So we got the call on Friday morning that he had had an accident. I was on a business trip for IBM in New Jersey. My ex-husband got the call. They couldn't reach me because I was in a brick building that my cell phone wasn't working. And so it took them 4 hours to track me down because I had been with a friend the night before. My boss knew where I was kind of thing, visiting a customer. So my son, Brad, had just come home from his overnight senior prom and happened to stop in because they had breakfast across the street and saw his father packing. So they got on a plane. And when they finally got through to me, the plane was, they were just about to close the door on their flight to Arizona. And so I ran out and ran to Newark Airport, had all kinds of problems getting through what I needed to do to get to basically, a friend routed them through Newark, and I met them at Newark Airport, and we flew to Arizona together. And we didn't know it, but while we were in the air, they pronounced Brent brain dead. Again, he had promised us he wouldn't get on a motorcycle without a helmet. There's no helmet law out there, but some kid, you know, came and they switched vehicles, and you know, they think they're invincible at 21. And his brain swelled and choked out his brainstem. So we flew out there, and that was Friday. We took him off life support on Saturday. We went through he was sharing a house with two other guys. We went through his house and his girlfriend's house with all his stuff on Sunday. On Monday, they had a service and a funeral at the chapel on campus. On Tuesday, we flew home from Arizona. On Wednesday, his body was embalmed and flew home. On Thursday, Brad graduated high school.
Oh, no.
And Friday and Saturday was Brent's wake wow. and funeral. So that whole week, I mean, it was lunacy. It was lunacy, yeah.
And for Brad
to have his graduation, right. But we had a lot of really good theater friends, and we had about 18 of us all cheering for him at his graduation, and had a little party back at the house afterwards. But everybody knew the situation, but we made the best of it. But it was tough. It was absolutely. And then he actually went off to college a couple of months later, and he did flunk out of his first year in college, but he got back in and finished. But because of grief. Mm-hmm. And then we had his brother's car shipped home, and he was driving that, and his car got stolen and totally stripped at college, on the college campus, even though it was locked. There was nothing. It took the engine. They took everything. It was nothing except a frame left. And so that was like a violation of his brother's car as well. So he had a really tough year that year.
Wow.
But he's been, you know, amazing. And now we've got a 4 and a 6-year-old, and they're awesome. Yeah.
I imagine for you as a mom too, you know, you're in such deep grief. You've just lost your child, but then you still have your other child there at home with you, and like trying to navigate his grief and parent him through it.
As a lot of kids do, you know, mm-hmm. and his friends were, you know, good and around for a month or two, like our friends are, and then everybody goes on with their lives, you know.
Right.
And it was tough with him. He had a hard time. And I worried about him. And, you know, tried to make him go to counseling. I think he went twice. My ex wouldn't go either. I was the only one who was in therapy, but you know, just part of what happens. But anyway, yeah, we did talk about it a lot, and we still do occasionally, you know, and that's all been helpful. And then I got married a second time to Jim, and he was awesome, and he was a great stepdad to Brad, and did so many things to help him with his restaurant and everything. And he had three adult kids, so I have three adult stepkids. Girl's the oldest, and she's not married, but the two boys are, and they each, one's got a little girl and the other one's got two boys. So I've got 5 grandchildren from age 1 to 6. So that's really, that's the loves of my life, but I'm very close to, but we were married almost 12 years. And then he died on his way to work with a maker heart attack. Just bam, gone. We had tickets for a show that night, and it was a really good marriage. And it just, you just never know, right? You just, on his way to work, and it's gone. Yeah. So
both of your, so these like huge losses in your life have been sudden and unexpected.
Yeah. Both sudden. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were. And actually both my parents were somewhat sudden too, come to think of it. Yeah. I mean, there's good and bad both ways, right? Because you don't really want somebody going through a lot of suffering either. And the people around them, it's hard on them as well. And it's not, some people say, well, at least you had time to, you know, to get used to it. I don't think you do. I don't think it's real until it happens, you know, so it affects everybody when it happens, regardless of whether it's long or short. Yeah. No, nobody escapes it, right?
Right.
Everybody in the world has some sort of grief.
Mm-hmm. No one escapes it. And I think what you said is you just never know. I mean, that's like how I live my life now, because you just don't. For me, like most of my loss has been sudden also. And so very conscious of time is finite and we don't know how much we have.
Right. And you know what's going to happen, right?
Yeah. Trying to like live the life that you want to live now.
Right. Yep, absolutely. And I'll keep putting things off. Oh, there's a great song about that. Until You Can't. I think it's either Luke Combs or somebody. It's a country song, but it's Until You Can't. It's fairly recent. It's this year.
And I'll have to look that up.
Oh, it's a really wonderful song, because it basically goes through all these things. You know, you can do that. It's like putting things off until you can't, you know.
Right.
It makes you really think about not putting things off. So, yeah, no, I treat life very differently than I used to, and what's important.
That. And I know you said that you did a lot of spiritual work and looking into different different things and seeing what resonated with you. And you mentioned having different signs over the years. Is there anything you can share with listeners that you, any experience you've had that you would want to share?
Yeah. And I do think people should do what's comfortable for them, right? That might be religion. It might not be. Right. For me, it really wasn't. I grew up Catholic and I believe in God and all that, but I just had pulled away from it. And I tried to get back into it afterwards, but it just didn't work for me. But the kind of the direct connection between me and God and the spirituality did. And again, I learned, I did a lot of reading and research about kind of what happens in spirits continuing. But with my son, there's several things I could mention, but probably one of the most convincing is later on, I had a friend who was a musician. And she was over here when I think we were just working out because she had actually played at a New Year's Eve party I had. And she's a songwriter as well. But we were just working out like around my in my living room, dining room area. And she asked me about music for the book before I had released it, my first book, the memoir. I said, gee, no, I didn't think of that, but that's kind of an interesting concept. And then she got this feeling and said, I've got to go get my keyboard out of my car. And I watched her channel music. I mean, she did something that she couldn't have made up on the fly because it had too many layers to it. And I had a very strong emotional reaction to it. And I didn't know why. And I asked her, what is that? Where's that coming from? And she looked around the room. She had never met Brent. She picked out his picture and said, that's where it's coming from. And so later on, I had her actually record the video. It's on my website, which is abutterfliesjourney.org. And it's possessive, not plural. So it's YS, not IES. And so it's a free gift, that one. And then she did another one later on when I met her for dinner on the 10th anniversary of his death. And there was another one that he had pulled her out of a garden and channeled. And we had them both recorded. But the even more interesting thing was he figured out that he could talk to her and she understood him. She just had that talent. She wasn't a medium. She didn't offer those services. But once he did, he'd start giving her messages for me. So there was one time when I went to a wedding in New Jersey and I was renting my house. I live on the ocean up north and I was renting it for the summer and I moved into the other house. But because we were away for the weekend, it was Monday morning. I decided to unpack. I decided to take a walk first. And so I'm on my walk and on the way back, I get this text from Nancy and she said, Brent says, be careful going up your front steps, Mom. She had never been to this house. And I said, okay. And I came back. By now, I'm used to getting messages from him. And the entire length of the step was cracked. If I had put my weight on it, I would have fallen and gotten hurt. So that, again, that's a pretty intangible. She had never been there. It was out of the blue. She just texted me out of the blue. And so I've got a couple of them like that. I could go on for a while.
I love to hear things like that. I don't know. Yeah. I know there are people who are skeptical and
You can't prove it either way, right?
Right.
But there's no way that she knew anything. She'd never been to that house. She had no idea. She didn't even know I was out walking and was about to go back to the steps, you know?
Yeah. I love that. Mm. I know I've shared this before. So if people have listened to all my episodes, they've probably heard this story. So mm-hmm. I apologize to anyone who's already heard this, but I just want to tell you because you just shared that with me. Right. I think it was maybe the 10th anniversary of my mom dying and my brother, who's next youngest to me, him and I decided we were going to have like a FaceTime call and have a toast to our mom because it was the anniversary and he was on vacation with his wife and his kids and he like put them to bed and him and his wife and me and my husband, we all got on this call and we like said a toast to my mom. And at this point, my younger brother had died also like a couple of years prior to that. Mm-hmm. And so we like said our things. And then I was like, okay, enjoy your night. You're on vacation. And like 5 minutes later, he texts me and was like, Mandy, I just pulled out a deck of cards. I had thrown it in my suitcase when we packed from home because I figured my wife and I can like play cards after the kids go to bed. And so they dumped out the cards after we talked on the phone. And in the deck of cards was our youngest brother's high school ID from the year our mom died. It was like wild.
Ooh, that chills. Yeah.
Right. Oh my God. It's just so cool. So, you know, that was like my,
and they knew they had not put it in the deck of cards earlier to store it or anything.
He was like, I have no idea. Like, I never opened this deck of cards in the last few years? Maybe, but it was so weird that it was on that day and it was from that year. And like, it's really cool.
Wow.
Yeah. I love to hear about stuff like that.
Yeah, no, sorry for the loss of your brother and your
Yeah, I mean, that's why we're all here doing this work, right? You know, you're out doing your work, and we're all just, I think everybody, not everybody, but like one of the ways I think that some people get through it is to put things back in the world to help other people in their own experience. And
I really think, I mean, again, when I wrote my memoir, it was 10 years after my older son died. And the last chapter is about the three most important things I learned. And one of them was about keeping an open mind and trusting your gut for what works for you and not really listening to everybody's advice because they don't really know, you know, but to keep an open mind and try things you haven't tried. And then the second thing was helping others helps you heal, because there's something about it. And it doesn't have to do with how they died, right? It doesn't have to be related. It's just there's something about helping others, whether it's people, kids, pets, whatever it is, that really is very healing. And the appreciation that you get is healing as well. And then the third thing was, it's all about the love. And that's about focusing on those good memories and understanding that their life was a gift to you, not just a loss. So anyway, that's my little.
I love it. Yeah. I love all the advice that we can give. And yeah, your story and your journey through all of this is incredible.
It's changed me, but it's also, I mean, I've met so many people that have become such close friends that have gone through this tragic kind of loss because they get it. They don't take life for granted anymore, you know, and they don't whine. They don't waste time. Like, I don't waste time on negativity. I just, if somebody's in one of those conversations, I'll just walk away. You know, it's like, I'm sorry, you're clueless. I don't have any patience for negativity and wasting time on silly things and people whining and things. It's like, yeah, get over it.
And there's such a power in shared experience.
Sure.
You know, connecting with other people who've been through, not, you know, it doesn't have to be the same type of loss even, but people who just get it and understand where you're coming from.
Right. No, absolutely. And it does, it changes you. It makes you realize what's important and what's not. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And that's quite a gift. The difficult way to receive that gift, but it's quite a gift.
I agree. Yeah. So where could people go to find your memoir, to learn more about your foundation? What's your website or social media handles?
Yeah, the website is abutterfliesjourney.org, and that's possessive, not plural. And it's the same thing on Facebook and on Instagram. And there's also Faces of Resilience, which is about the photos. And there's a photo gallery on a Butterfly's Journey website. Amazon has the first book, which is the memoir of the Butterfly's Journey, Healing Grief After the Loss of a Child. The second book was Faces of Resilience. And I'm part of 8 other books, but it's really not worth going through all those. But the Faith Finding Answers in the Heart, Volume 2, is one of them that comes to mind right away. But yeah, I probably do more activity on Facebook than the other social media, because that seems to be where most of the people that are interested are. And anyway, besides that website, you could email me at barbara.info@abutterfliesjourney. The phone number is 617-410-6309. And, you know, I do free calls to discuss the grief recovery method classes. I'm happy to spend a half an hour doing that, you know, talking to somebody to see whether it's useful for them. And I've done some group classes and I can arrange that, but I usually do one-on-one. I find it to be the most effective. And then the only other thing I'd say is, if somebody wanted to do a photo shoot kind of a thing, like a Faces of Resilience photo shoot at an event, I'm happy to do that too. You know, it's basically just covering expenses. And that's always well received. It's kind of hard to understand it until you see it in action, but it's very well received.
It sounds like it. I'm part of a couple different events and things. Like, I'm part of a local recovery organization that focuses on fitness for recovery from addiction. And they do like an annual event. And part of it is remembering people who have been lost to addiction. So yeah, I can imagine something like that would be such a...
Is that how you lost your brother?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry. But, you know, again, a friend of mine who used to be the chairman of the board for Compassionate Friends now started the organization called SADOD, and it's SADOD.org. and another
friend. Yeah, I heard you mention that. I actually am not familiar with that one.
Yeah, that's great. No, it's very good. That's in the, it's based in Massachusetts, but they're actually starting to reach out to other states and stuff now. And I know opentohope.com has got an amazing, probably the biggest resource center. I have a resource center on my side too, but that one has just got all, I mean, thousands of resources for grief.
Awesome.
Which is lovely. Yeah, I just met some really just incredible people, and we're all just trying to help people.
Yeah. No, I love the project with the photos and everything. It sounds amazing. And, you know, like you're offering such great services. So
thank you so
appreciate your time coming on to talk to everyone. I will include links and like your usernames and everything in the show notes so people can find it easily.
I made it a phone number and just that I do a free half hour call because it's the only evidence-based methodology in the world for grief. It's been used 40 years on 6 continents and it was written by a bereaved dad. So it's very effective and it's very different from support or therapy, but it's very complementary to those.
Yeah. Is there any last thing that you want to leave anyone with them? Anything we didn't cover together?
I think usually when I try to give somebody maybe a little advice at the end, it's really try not to isolate, try to reach out when you're feeling, you know, down and, or get out of the house and go find something you like to do or somebody calling a friend or a family member or whatever, but also really trust your gut, right? Don't let other people's opinions of what you should do get too deep into your head. Just trust your gut and just keep an open mind and keep trying stuff because there is no magic bullet here, but there is everything that you try will literally help a little. And what I tell people is try 3 different things and then keep using the 1 or 2 that work and drop one and try another, you know, that kind of thing. And don't try something just once. Try it once, twice or 3 times to see whether or not you think it helps, right? Just kind of having some tenacity and some patience and keeping an open mind. And the last thing is, please trust that your loved ones are still with you in spirit, whether you get signs or not. And you know, depending on, there's all kinds of things that affect that, but just trust it. They are absolutely still with you. When you think about it, the law of physics said that nothing ever goes away. It just changes form, right? So maybe from energy to matter and back, but it doesn't really disappear. That's the first thing that got me really believing that that could be possible.
I think your story is such a powerful reminder that things as bad as they are in the moment will get better and that your life is worth staying and there are people who love you. And so Absolutely. You know, pushing through the difficult moments and reaching out for help so that you can get to the better moments that are ahead.
Right. Yeah. It's not fast and it's not easy, but it absolutely is worth it. And I'm happy now. And I have 5 grandkids and, you know, my son and 3 stepkids and their partners. And, you know, it's wonderful. And I'm looking forward to the next phase and maybe even having a partner again. And, you know, we'll just whatever. Oh, yeah, it's okay. It's good. People can. I know some people say you can't ever recover. Maybe, I mean, it's not like you ever stop missing them, but absolutely can heal. Yeah, I believe that.
I hope you enjoyed and took something away from listening to Barbara's story. She talked several times about how helping others helped herself, an experience that I can also relate to. So for today's journal prompt, write about a time you helped someone and what that experience gave you in return. Or write about how you would like to help others if you could. Like always, let the writing lead you in whatever direction it takes. Thank you so much for listening. Please make sure you subscribe, share this episode with anyone who could benefit from it, and as always, visit RememberGrams anytime you need to send a little love to someone who is grieving. Thank you and have a wonderful day.